The dwarves sat in darkness and utter silence. They ate little, said nothing, until they could bear it no longer.
"Let us try the door," said Thorin. "I must feel the wind on my face soon or die. I think I would rather be smashed by Smaug in the open than suffocate here."
But neither key nor the magic it had once obeyed would ever open that door again.
"We're trapped," they groaned. "This is the end. We shall die here."
"Oh, come," Bilbo said. "Well, there's life, there's hope. I am going down the tunnel once again. The only way out is down, and I think this time you had better all come with me. And be as quiet as you can be. There may be no Smaug at the bottom, but then again, there may be." Down, down they went. It was pitch black. Not a sound stirred below. Bilbo slipped on his ring and went ahead. But he did not need it. The darkness was complete, and they were all invisible, ring or no ring. In fact, so black was it that the hobbit came to the opening unexpectedly, put his hand on air, stumbled forward, and rolled headlong into the hall. There was not a gleam of light, unless, as it seemed to him when at last he slowly raised his head, there was a pale white glint above him and far off in the gloom. But certainly it was not a spark of dragonfire, though the worm stench was heavy in the place. "Confound you, Smaug, you worm!" he squealed aloud. "Stop playing hide-and-seek. Give me a light, and then eat me if you can catch me." There was no sound.
"Now I wonder what on earth Smaug is playing at," he said. "He is not at home today, I do believe."
"Light," he cried. "Can anybody make a light?" After a while, a twinkling gleam showed Owen coming with a small pine torch alight in his hand, and Glowin with a bundle of others under his arm. But Bilbo could not persuade the dwarves to light the others or to come and join him yet. If he liked to risk a light, that was his affair. They would wait in the tunnel for his report. Bilbo's light grew smaller as he wandered away into the vast hall. Then it began to rise, dancing into the air, climbing the great mound of treasure. Soon he stood upon the top, and still went on. Then they saw him halt and stoop for a moment, but they did not know the reason. It was the Arkenstone, the heart of the mountain. So Bilbo guessed from Thorin's description. At last he looked down upon it, and he caught his breath. The great jewel shone before his feet of its own inner light, and yet, cut and fashioned by the dwarves who had dug it from the heart of the mountain long ago, it took all light that fell upon it and changed it into 10,000 sparks of white radiance shot with the glints of the rainbow. Bilbo's arm went towards it, drawn by its enchantment. He lifted it, shut his eyes, and put it in his deepest pocket.
"Now I am a burglar indeed," thought he. "I suppose I must tell the other dwarves about it sometime. But did they not say I could pick and choose my own share? And I think I would choose this if they took all the rest."
All the same, he had an uncomfortable feeling that the picking and choosing had not really been meant to include this marvellous gem, and that trouble would yet come of it. He came to the great doors at the further side, and a draught of air refreshed him. Still there was no sight nor sound of Smaug. He was just about to turn and go back, when a black shape swooped at him and brushed his face. He squeaked and started, stumbled backwards, and fell. His torch dropped head downwards and went out.
"Only a bat, I suppose, and hope," he said miserably.
"Thorin, Balin, Owen, Glowin, Feely, Keely," he cried as loud as he could. "The light's gone out. Someone come and find me and help me."
"Now what on earth or under it has happened? Certainly not the dragon, or he would not go on squeaking. It seems we have got to go and help our burglar."
"Only a bat and a drop torch. Nothing worse," said Bilbo in answer to their questions.
The mere fleeting glimpse of treasure which they had caught as they went along had rekindled all the fire of their dwarvish hearts. And when the heart of a dwarf, even the most respectable, is wakened by gold and by jewels, he grows suddenly bold, and he may become fierce. All were willing to believe that for the present Smaug was away from home. Each now gripped a lighted torch, and as they gazed, first on one side and then on another, they forgot fear and even caution. Feely and Keely were almost in a merry mood, and finding still hanging there many golden harps strung with silver, they took them and struck them, and and being magical, and also untouched by the dragon who had small interest in music, they were still in tune. The dark hall was filled with a melody that had long been silent. But most of the dwarves were more practical. They gathered gems and stuffed their pockets and let what they could not carry fall back through their fingers with a sigh. Thorin searched from side to side for something which he could not find. It was the Arkenstone, but he spoke of it yet to no one. Now the dwarves took down mail and weapons from the walls and armed themselves. Royal indeed did Thorin look, in a coat of gold-plated rings, with a silver-hafted axe in a belt crusted with scarlet stones.
"Mr. Baggins," he cried, "here is the first payment of your reward. Cast off your old coat and put on this."
With that, he put on Bilbo a small coat of mail, wrought for some young elf prince long ago. It was of silver steel, which the elves call mithril, and with it went a belt of pearls and crystals. "I feel magnificent," he thought, "but I expect I look rather absurd. How they would laugh on the hill at home. Thorin! What next? We're armed, but what good has any armor ever been against Smaug the Dreadful? This treasure is not yet won back. We're not looking for gold yet, but for a way of escape, and we have tempted luck too long."
"You speak the truth," answered Thorin, recovering his wits. "Let us go. I will guide you. Not in 1,000 years should I forget the ways of this palace."
One by one they walked behind Thorin, a line of little lights in the darkness that halted often, listening in fear once more for any rumour of the dragon's coming. At last, a white glimmer could be seen coming through some opening far above, and the air smelt sweeter. Before them light came dimly through great doors that hung twisted on their hinges and half burnt.
"There is the great chamber of Thror," said Thorin, "the hall of feasting and council. Not far off now is the front gate."
As they came through yet more doors, a sound of water fell upon their ears, and the grey light grew suddenly more full.
"There is the birth of the running river," said Thorin. "From here it hastens to the gate. Let us follow it."
Out of a dark opening in a wall of rock there issued a boiling water, and it flowed swirling in a narrow channel carved and made straight and deep by the cunning of ancient hands. Beside it ran a stone-paved road, wide enough for many men abreast. Swiftly along they ran, round a wide-sweeping turn, and behold, before them stood the broad light of day. Now before them the water fell noisily outward and foamed down towards the valley. They flung their pale torches on the ground and stood gazing out with dazzled eyes.
They were come to the front gate,
and they were looking out upon Dale.
"Well," said Bilbo, "I never expected to be looking out of this door, and I never expected to be so pleased to see the sun again and to feel the wind on my face. But, ow, this wind is cold."
Suddenly Bilbo realized that he was not only tired, but also very hungry indeed.
"It seems to be late morning," he said. "And so I suppose it's more or less breakfast time, if there is any breakfast to have. But I don't feel that Smaug's front doorstep is the safest place for a meal. Do let's go somewhere where we can sit quiet for a bit."
"Right," said Balin. "We ought to make for the old lookout post at the southwest corner of the mountain."
"Dear me," grumbled the hobbit. "More walking. I wonder how many breakfasts we have missed inside that nasty, clockless, timeless hole."
"Come, come," said Thorin, laughing. "Don't call my palace a nasty hole. You wait till it has been cleaned and redecorated."
"That won't be till Smaug's dead," said Bilbo glumly. "In the meanwhile, where is he? I would give a good breakfast to know. I hope he's not up on the mountain looking down at us."
In the late afternoon, they came to the top of the ridge and saw the wintry sun going downwards to the west. Here they found a flat place, without a wall on three sides, but back to the north by a rocky face in which there was an opening like a door. From that door, there was a wide view east, south, and west.
"Here," said Balin, "in the old days we used to keep watchmen. We can hide here and see much without being seen."
Some threw themselves down at once and slept, but the others sat near the outer door and discussed their plans. In all their talk, they came perpetually back to one thing. Where was Smaug?